Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And let's go on a great adventure, an adventure between worlds. We're going to explore different places, actually, within our Earth, nonetheless, and beyond, because everything is beyond. If we talk about the greater consciousness of the universe. And to help us explore this wonderful book called Roya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds, it's an incredible novel, fascinating, so much material in here, it's wonderful. And we're interviewing the author as a guest on our show, Sarian Michael White. Sarian, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, this book is a deep journey. I read it over a period of time, indulged in it, let's just say, that there's so much excitement in ways that somebody of my mentality, and hopefully many of our audience, will really appreciate. Because you talk about other dimensional worlds within our world. And then there are humans. We start off with humans who actually get turned on.
Yes.
And get transported in interesting ways into worlds beneath our world. And there's more than one. As we find out in the book. And it has to do with different consciousness. And in the book, you talk about, for instance, the difference between the consciousness of the Atlanteans and the Lemurians.
Yes.
And so who's who and what's what?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've gone through my own personal experience of remembering these ancient civilizations. And sometimes that's an experience of feeling like you're tapping into Akashic records. Sometimes it feels like you're remembering past lives. Some experiences felt like leaping into the body of somebody that was there and looking through their eyes and taking a look around at what was going on in these ancient civilizations. And then there are, I believe, as many people do, that there are remnants of these civilizations still living inside the earth in settlements that are beneath the earth's oceans and inside of sacred mountains and other places inside of the earth that, you know, we can only dream about and imagine and, you know, perhaps visit if we are granted a visit in our spiritual bodies through, you know, out of body travel or remote viewing. And then there are occasionally stories of people that say that they've actually met people from inside the earth. You know, I remember hearing some of these stories that were coming out of people having had experiences in Mount Shasta with the city of Telos, beneath the city of Mount Shasta, I mean, beneath the mountain of Mount Shasta. And, you know, I read some of these stories and they're fascinating, but, you know, how did this end up in a book? I mean, it wasn't like I said, oh, that'd be a great thing to write a book about. The book was revealed to me. It's a channeled fiction book. I didn't know where the story was going to go. I had the first scene in my mind and it was like a discovery process. It's like I wrote the book that I wanted to read, but it all happened really spontaneously. And when it started to go in this direction of we're going to explore our connection to these inner earth civilizations and the truths that they may want to bring out into the world and their teachings as, you know, an element of a story that characters are evolving through, that just fascinated me. It was like all that whole world that I had been exploring for some time energetically opened up as an inner experience in my imagination that these characters were living through.
So, and yet it's so well presented in step by step or stage by stage as these humans on the surface, one young girl in particular, a teenager, named Roya, who is opened to an experience of from a woman who was disguised as a human, but she was really from inner earth, and she helped Roya find a magical book. And Roya was very open to reading this and experimenting with it, with the instructions in it. But it was a very magical book. It wasn't, it was in the library, but perhaps only she could have even seen it in the library. It was there for her. And the librarian was actually this woman in disguise who was only there to make sure Roya got this book. So that's the start of it. And then all of a sudden, there, Roya's family is involved, her friends are involved, and they go on an adventure. And it turns out that she has a magical family, magical friends. And it all works together. It's all been, let's say, prearranged. Soul contracts.
Yeah, soul contracts would be a good way of describing it. I love, though, there's something about this book. It's, you know, you use the word magic several times there. And, you know, Roya, the character in the book, is a girl that grew up with the Harry Potter books. She's a fan of Harry Potter. She's got a big imagination. She's always like wondered if somehow some of it could be real, because something about it feels real when your imagination can expand so powerfully through a story. And what she gets to experience is, you know, what to her senses might seem like magic, but you discover that there's, you know, real spiritual abilities that human beings have, intuitive abilities, inner senses, real mystical powers that are part of the hidden realities of nature, things that are, you know, might be described as magical. But this story is actually a bridge between, you know, the sort of magical world of, you know, something like Harry Potter and something that is communicating to us about real attainable experiences and potentials that we could describe as magical, but they're very much a part of nature, very much a part of our natural human capabilities to experience these things.
Right. And this is book one. And what's exciting about it is that it's very real. These are fantasies of, you know, of reality that could be real on another planet, perhaps. It's hard to imagine them as real on this planet, but we don't know. There's a lot we don't know. But what's truly real is the opportunity to think differently, to hold reality in a different form than we normally do. We have very, perhaps what you might call Atlantean minds, that we see things in a material fashion, yet we really are potentially very advanced, very advanced culture, multidimensionally. And some humans already have great abilities, but it's still, we really need to open up the heart energy of most of our planet. And
absolutely,
yeah. And so with this venture talks about, there's so many different parts of it. There's a lot of technology, of advanced technology in here that we'll look at. But there's also competition between different types of beings that pertains to our own future here. It's like, you know, we're all thinking that we're evolving into this great oneness. And, you know, there's this evolution happening now, ascension happening that will bring us into higher dimensional realities. But there's also the resistance to it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's resistance, and there's ways in which both the movement toward oneness and even the resistance to the deeper levels of connection and you know, intimate experience of connection to the earth and to each other empathically, how both of those things could be distorted in a way by forces that want to shape human history and to convince us that we need a technological interface to bridge us into that oneness. Of course, such a technological interface would also, in a way, preserve that aspect of us that wants to maintain separation while simultaneously giving us an artificial experience of being more connected to the world. So that's a way in which our resistance to oneness and the movement toward oneness both could be used against us to get us to go down this path of seeing electronic technology and even more advanced forms of this technology as the vehicle for us to achieve a lasting peace in this world or to become an advanced culture. So that's something we have to really watch out for. I mean, this the idea that somebody could manipulate a a digital reality with their minds, with thought alone, that would seem like magic. That would seem like you could just give somebody a headset and suddenly they get to experience what it's like to be psychic. But if we do that, we're getting rid of the possibility that we could develop completely natural psychic abilities to eventually become powerful enough to manipulate matter with our thoughts. You know, maybe hundreds of years from now, we don't really know consciously and collectively where the development of our natural abilities could go. And that's what the book also wants to explore. It wants to take a look at, you know, a potential civilization that has developed those kinds of inner senses over thousands of years versus the kind of technological version of our culture that's being pushed on us now by market forces.
Right, and there's a great danger of artificial intelligence commandeering a lot of life we know it. I don't think it can ever match the multidimensionality of the human mind.
Yeah.
But certainly can be a more powerful computer of the natural world, material world as we know it, than our minds can be. And so so we're caught on many levels that machines offer us, but we're dependent on that. And what happens if someday the energies are blown out by some solar storm or something like that? And then,
right. I mean, if that happens, it'll be highest good. You know, it'll happen because it's meant to happen, because that would catalyze our evolutionary growth in some way.
Yeah, we don't know what the highest good is. Maybe the highest good is for humans not to be on this planet anymore.
Yeah. You know, I think we're dealing with a lot of very profound existential questions, existential threats to our existence, a lot of things that are colliding with this century that we're living in. You know, it was written in another book that I read called The Key by Whitley Strieber, and he has this dialogue with the master of the key, and the master basically says that humanity will either ascend or go extinct, but either way, their humanity's fate will be decided in this century. So this is the, and I agree with that. I actually think this is the century that our trajectory will be decided. And I think there's more possibilities there than just ascending or going extinct necessarily in terms of, you know, the next so many hundreds of years. We could still be around for hundreds of years, but be a culture that doesn't have a destiny of ascension, but still exist here as a technological culture, you know, gradually expending all of our resources in various ways that don't support our higher evolution to transcend physical reality.
Well, these are the different forces at work here that are fighting each other. And in your book, I think it's an opportunity to let the book teach us what possibilities exist for us, just in exploring the potential realities that we have in our own multidimensionality versus these other forces that want to hold us imprisoned by science.
Yeah. And I want to say, I mean, personally, I'm not, like anti-artificial intelligence. I think there's a place for these technologies. I just think that it needs to be put in its proper place by having our values prioritized around networking consciousness together in natural ways. But I also want to speak to, you have mentioned multidimensionality several times, the whole concept of a bridge between worlds, that's explored in a lot of different ways in the book. In fact, I don't think you could point to any one example of a bridge between worlds and necessarily say that right there is the bridge between worlds that is referenced in the title. Because
there are many references to many bridges.
Yeah, there are many bridges between worlds, and there is going to be perhaps a singular concept of a bridge between worlds that includes all of the bridges in one understanding or vision or prophecy of integration, where we are recognizing ourselves as a bridge to a more enlightened future, a bridge to the infinite future of humanity that will transcend our physicality and go beyond the light barrier, beyond physicality, beyond this world. But this idea of being a bridge between worlds, I think, is interesting because it speaks to something that is coming into being and phasing into humanity's experience of itself and its evolution now that wasn't here decades ago, at least not to the degree or with as many people having this experience. And what I mean by that is that we are now integrating multiple dimensions. We are starting to integrate multidimensionality. You know, you hear about people being light workers, people that work with light. I love the term light integrator, because I think that there are an enormous number of people that have come here in the world to be light integrators. They're not necessarily, people that are going to be like, acting as healers or conduits for light or channels in the way a lot of light workers are, but so many people fit into this category of being a light integrator, because we are integrating with light as a consciousness. We are integrating with the light of our own I am presences, of our higher selves, of a God presence or source consciousness. And either way, this is all a part of integrating with multiple dimensions of reality, whether you see that as different vibrational levels stacked on top of each other that are collapsing and coming together inside of our bodies, or whether you speak of different dimensions of reality in terms of extraterrestrial consciousness, angelic consciousness, the consciousness of animals, and we're integrating these different families of consciousness as different dimensions of being or families of beingness that are being plugged into what a new and more integrated human being is.
Right. And what I see as light is information.
Exactly.
Just higher information. And so it brings me back to the book and how much wonderful information there was amongst the people of Lys. How do you pronounce it?
Well, I don't know if I even pronounced it correctly from the original inspiration of this word. I say Lys, but some people say Lys, and that would be just as correct. Right. I actually found out that that word in Norwegian means light, which is so fitting. I think it's amazing. But I'll tell you a little backstory. One of my favorite science fiction books when I was in high school was called Beyond the Fall of Night by Arthur C. Clarke. There was an updated version that he did called The City in the Stars. And there was a telepathic culture in that book called Lys or Lys, spelled the same way. Uh-huh. So that's a little nod to Arthur C. Clarke, because he was like probably one of the main influences back when I was reading science fiction as a teenager. And so I wanted to throw that little reference in there, but it felt like it was also channeled, because when I was writing this book, I didn't just think about I can throw in a reference about one of my favorite authors in there. It just happened, you know, it happened. All of the scenes in the book happened in visions and dreams.
Yeah, it's so great to be inspired by that higher consciousness giving you the book. And you're somebody, obviously, who really embraces the story and understands it deeply and brings so much to it. I mean, there are different terms in here, like betweenergy and disremming. What can you say about that?
Well, disremming, it's interesting. That word actually was derived from an experience that I had where I witnessed a group of people through focused intent actually dematerialize and transport a physical object to a different location. And I was able to observe this kind of thought experiment that occurred. And it was all by accident. The people didn't know that they were doing this. This group of people, a friend of mine had lost his wallet, and he had all of his friends looking all over this house that they were staying in for the wallet. And after they could not find it anywhere, he then assumed that he must have left the wallet back in his apartment. And at the point at which he made that decision, the wallet appeared on the floor right there in the room that I was in. And it had not been there when I had entered the room earlier. So I was observing this and I was like, that's odd. That wasn't there when I first came in the room. And yet there is my roommate's wallet is sitting there on the floor. And then this voice said, go and look at it, examine it closely and see that it is there, but do not touch it. And so I did not touch it. I didn't make physical contact with it, but I saw that it was there. And then some hours later, my friend enters the room from behind me. So I didn't, you know, see him come in right away. And he walks across the room and he starts talking about how he had all his friends, you know, looking everywhere for this wallet, this other house. And I said, oh, well, you must have, you're telling me this because you saw your wallet on the floor, right? And he was like, what are you talking about? And I said, you didn't pick up your wallet just now? And he's like, no, there's no wallet on the floor. And I was like, well, your wallet was right there. And then he tells me the story about how he had everyone convinced that the wallet must be back in Boulder, Colorado, is where we were. And then some hours later, while he was driving home, he had a memory that he actually had the wallet with him when he had paid to go to the hot springs the night before. And so it could not have been back in his apartment in Boulder. So he had a conflicting memory. So he had actually misplaced the wallet in his memory, and that actually had shifted the position of the wallet in time and space. And then as soon as he had a conflicting memory, it repositioned it back. And the place where they found it is so odd because they looked there a million times and there's no way they could have missed it. Wow. So, I mean, I it's the first time that I've just shared that story in an interview, but that is an example of disremming, disremembering the location of an object and re-remembering it somewhere else. I mean, it's a different concept of teleportation. Teleportation, in my mind, is projection. And disremming is changing your memory of where you are. So it's almost like there's no movement from a certain reference point.
And that's an important skill to have in your story, in the
yes.
book. Because people need it. There's a lot of movement between these worlds.
Yeah, in fact, I was just coming back from this New Living Expo and I had misplaced my recorder. I could not find it anywhere. And I was like, oh no, maybe I left it there. And so I made a decision to remember that the recorder was in a particular set of drawers with some other office supplies. So I don't know maybe I just rimmed it in there. Maybe it was originally there and I just didn't see it. But I just thought, you know what, I'm going to make the choice to remember that it's in those drawers so that when I check the drawers, it'll be there when I get home and unpack. And it was.
Wow. We should all experiment with that.
Yeah, let's experiment with that one.
Yeah. So there's so much, though, and we're getting near the end of the show. We'll have to talk about the book again another time because there's so much information in here about these different worlds that that we're trying to bridge in our world now and in the world in the book. And it's much more pronounced in the book because you have particular forces at play that have to defend themselves against each other.
Yeah, and you know, the real truth of it is that the book does contain a real prophecy of convergence, integration, emergence. And that's a prophecy about how all of these different realities are colliding with us, converging into our inner experience, and then we are integrating with them, and then a more integrated and whole and complete version of humanity is emerging from within us. A whole new world is emerging from inside of us. And so even though in the story you see this out-pictured experience of characters going on adventures to have experiences in physical reality of these different worlds that are being bridged together, it's a symbolic story that is connecting our inner senses with the different realities, the hidden realities of our world that we are all going to be challenged to integrate with from within ourselves, no matter where you are, no matter whether or not you see these things for yourself. We are going to integrate with these realities because the energy of oneness is bringing it all to our doorstep. And we have to learn how to make peace with the diversity, to accept it, to integrate with the vast spectrum of what is there.
And this is why people need to buy the book.
Yes, I know.
The Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds.
This book is like a psychic gift that can lead you through a process of integration while entertaining you at the same time.
Wonderful, yes.
Well designed for that.
And we're really at the end of the show. How can people find a website?
You can go to royasands.com. And Roya is R-O-Y-A. That's a Persian name that means dream or vision. And you can also look it up on Amazon and order it from there. Either way, I love for people to come check out the website and perhaps sign up on the mailing list to get updates about the series and about other things that I do, because I occasionally do a little bit of a conference call or put out some more videos about the book and things like that.
Great. Sarian Michael White, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening.